As we talk about the power of music in the brain with Neil Slade, his latest work, The Brain Tuning, we'll take your calls this hour as well, right here on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Neil Slade with us. We'll take your calls as well. Neil, does music also affect, the animal world?
Oh, that's a very interesting question. Absolutely. And I had to kind of think about, what is that connection between animals and music? And the first thing that kind of comes to mind is, the basic question, what is music? And, in primitive man, for example, who didn't even have languages, people had very global expressions, not unlike the different sounds that a dog might make to express one thing or another. So primitive man, for example, might go, huh? Or it might go, ah, or it might go, right? Just utterances. And animals are capable of that very same thing, aren't they? I mean, a dog expresses certain emotions and feelings by the sound that comes out of his mouth. Sometimes it's an excited, bark. Sometimes it's a roar. Sometimes it's a, my dog practically talks to me sometimes. I mean, he'll go, right? And what these are, these vocalizations are variances in timbre and in pitch and in volume, right? Which is exactly what happens in music.
That's right.
Isn't it? It's music is a kind of organization of pitches and volume and timbre. Initially it was from our vocal cords, but then it came out through musical instruments. And you can go in the animal kingdom, and you can see that a great variety of animals use vocalizations to communicate with each other, to express things. And in some animals, it's more, we find it more musical than others. Humpback whales, for example, they've been studied, and you can see very complex patterns of vocalizations from humpback whales. And there have been albums produced called, like, for example, Songs of the Humpback Whale. People have taken the chirping of birds and looked at it and found melodies in what birds are produced.
Can you make music, Neil, to annoy people?
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
What's interesting about that is that the same music that you might find attractive and pleasurable at one particular point in time can be extremely annoying at a different time.
At another, yeah.
Right? I mean, same you'll go thing. Out, you'd go out to see, a big rock concert, right, where it's deafeningly loud, right? And you would find that exciting and pleasurable. But if your next door neighbor is playing that exact same music while you're trying to go to sleep, it's going to be very,
it's a different
very
feeling.
Annoying. It comes down to musical taste. I mean, I like to listen to Don Van Vliet, who was known as Captain Beefheart back in the 60s. And I find his music very interesting and exciting. Other people can't stand it because it's very dissonant. It's very modern sounding. So you have a wide variety of tastes. So it just depends on, at what given moment, what you want to listen to and what kind of effect you're looking for.
All right, let's go to some of the phones here. Let's go to Dave in Nashville, Tennessee to get stuff going here. Hi, David. Welcome to Coast to Coast.
Hi, how you doing, George?
Good, David. Thank you.
Hi, Dave.
I just had a quick question for Neil. You said earlier that you don't agree with music making people do certain things and commit certain actions. I'm a hip-hop artist. I'm a lyricist also. I write songs for various different genres of music. And I've heard stories and reports of a secret meeting in hip hop when it was first originating, where the, you know, the heads of the music labels were, had ties into the prison industry, and where they would tell their artists to make more aggressive and violent music to keep the prisons filled.
Hmm.
Gee, well, I think you could probably say, you know, certain kinds of music, I if they contained lyrics, for example, that talk about violence, for example, it may tip somebody into committing a violent act, you know, but not necessarily so. You know, most of us have gone to a horror film before, or a violent movie or a war film, and we don't go out and commit violent acts. So this was one of the big points of contention many years ago when they were trying to put labels on records, saying that, well, if you listen to this kind of music, it would cause you to do bad things. And I just don't find that that's true. I think it has to do more, you know, I think a stable person can enjoy and take in all kinds of art and music and appreciate it and understand it and not necessarily be moved one way or the other to commit any kind of negative act, you know, because of what he's heard. So that's kind of my feeling on that.
Neil, why is it sometimes, you know, you're driving your car and somebody pulls alongside of you and their windows are open and their radio or their CD player is just, you know, glaring all kinds of music, and to you it's noise, to them it's music.
Yeah.
Why is that?
I don't know if that, you know, I mean, you know, different strokes for different folks. And it's the same reason that I might like listening to Frank Zappa or John McLaughlin, where you or somebody else may not be interested in that at all. We kind of, music is sort of it's a way of providing of identifying ourselves, of defining who we are. And again, you know, talking about the amygdala that forms these associations, you know, certainly we have some, we're predisposed to enjoy certain kinds of things in music, but we can learn to enjoy and appreciate other things in music as a way of, you know, defining who we are. And back to your observation, you know, I mean, back in the 50s, people who grew up listening to Elvis and early rock and roll, they probably still find that to be their favorite kind of music. But if you grew up in the 80s or the 90s or the 2000s, you grew up and identified with a different kind of music. Maybe that music was a lot louder than Frank Sinatra or Doris Day. And that's what kind of triggers that pleasure response in your brain. And so somebody, you know, who's in that car with it playing their music at 140 decibels, and it's just a simple bass drum, it turns them on. It's as simple as that.
Let's go to our first-time caller, Kate, in Omaha, Nebraska. Kate, good morning.
Good morning.
Hi,
it's
Kate.
So nice to talk to you.
Glad you got in.
I am, too. I'm a music sensitive, and I hear it in voice also. And years ago, I used to work for CBS Records, and I would pick certain songs that were to be promoted, and I was successful at that. Life has changed since then, and I was introduced to the Mozart Effect about 15 years ago, and I was more intrigued with the medical side of how it affected patients during OR and in post. And I don't know where to get licensed to. Omaha is full of doctors and hospitals. It's thick with them. And I wondered if there was a place or a course study or something where you could become licensed to enter a hospital, become recognized, and help the patients pick the music for their OR rather than the doctors, and then for their post-op, because music does have a tremendous effect on the body and especially the mind.
Well, to answer that question, I do know there are bona fide music therapists throughout the world. I couldn't direct you to specific universities that offer accreditation in that particular field, but I'm certain there are places to go that you can be certified as a music therapist and then engage in going to hospitals and doctors to, you know, to apply that the kind of thing. Certainly, music is used to regulate the breathing of premature babies. Music is used as therapy for stroke victims, for people who suffer from Parkinson's, for all manner of real medical uses. There's many, many applications for music, and I'm sure that if you just spend a little time researching it, you'll find exactly where you can go for, you know, that kind of accreditation.
Neil, you know, with music, can it be used in warfare as far as sound, where you could hurt their eardrums or something?
Oh, that's very interesting. You know, the British singer Kate Bush once did a song called Experiment X, and it was a song about a British research. It was a secret army program, and they were trying to do exactly that. They were trying to design a weapon by which they could use sound or music to inflict damage upon an enemy. Music, in terms of warfare, I think probably has a more or less indirect kind of application. There's always been songs for that soldiers would sing for going into war. As far as that kind of thing goes. But using, other than, that experiment of using sound as a weapon, I don't know that music itself, one other thing comes to mind. I recall stories in interrogation camps trying to extract information out of prisoners under interrogation. One tool would be to keep them awake at night by playing loud music nonstop.
Torturing them.
Yeah, and again, it's kind of like the neighbor who's playing Led Zeppelin at 2 o'clock in the morning, and you've got to be up to take the bus to work at 6 a.m. So there could be that kind of application.
All right, let's go back to the phones. We have Richard, truck driving in Virginia, on the wild card line. Hey, Richard, go ahead.
Yes, sir. I just wanted to say that you had brought up a question about why do people, you know, play their music when they come up to a stoplight or a stoplight.
Right.
Well, I just wanted to say, as one of those people that do that, we put a lot of money into our stereo systems and everything, and I just see it kind of like maybe back in the day where Mozart had his record, or somebody had their record playing Mozart, blaring it, you know what I'm saying? We like to enjoy it. I mean, I don't know. I know certain people don't enjoy it, and I try to respect other people. I try to turn it down when I'm in neighborhood, you know, or I roll up to a stoplight. I always try to turn it down to respect other people, but I love it. You know, it just gets you pumping, it gets you moving, it gets you energized.
Yeah, I think people like to listen to loud music, and, listening to it in your car probably is one of the more socially acceptable ways to do it, because you're least, if you like to listen to loud music and you want to be energized, it's certainly better to listen in your car than listen in your apartment where your neighbor can't get away from you, you know? So I kind of understand that maybe that could be the best way to listen to loud music is in your car. Because anybody that doesn't like it, they're going to be gone in 5 seconds anyway.
Well, that's a good point. We've got time for one more call before the break, Neil, then we'll come back with more. Let's go to Jacksonville, Florida. Tom's with us, east of the Rockies. Hey, Tom, go ahead. You're on with us.
Yeah. You mentioned using music during the war. We had a lot of trouble learning code and blinker, Morse code and blinker. As a matter of fact, I set in extra classes with Ted Williams at Pensacola during WW2. And it turns out that there are some radio operators that can not only copy the code, but can carry on a conversation. And I'm wondering if those people are more attuned to the music of it, or are they, does the music come into it one way or another?
You know, I don't know how to answer that question. What occurred to me was that this kind of ties in with, you know, I'll get around to explaining how this ties in. Stroke victims who can't talk normally can sing sentences. Something in their brain, in the unaffected part, something in their brain allows them to communicate and do it if they're singing as opposed to just talking. And one thing that I've used in teaching music is that you can, if a kid has trouble remembering a certain rhythm, you can say, well, think of a sentence that sounds like that rhythm, like, I like to eat ice cream. Okay, that could be interpreted into a basic rhythm. And so what occurs to me is that, well, perhaps if you're trying to learn a code, say of dots and dashes, you may be able to relate that to a certain musical phrase and remember it in that fashion, you know, that because you have the musical phrase ingrained in your head, and it has its own certain rhythm, and that might carry over into some sort of rhythmic code, perhaps a Morse code or something like that. So for all I know, that could be part of what you're talking about there. I don't know.
Neil, if people want to get into this kind of music to enhance themselves, what do they do? They go to your website? How do you help?
Oh, were you talking about the music for ESP?
For ESP,
yeah.
Just about anything you want to do.
Yeah, I actually set up a couple of pages. You can, of course, access it through the main page, which is brainradar.com. But you can also go to musicforesp.com. And people can actually do some of the research. They can do that test themselves and download one of the music files that we used in that research, and it gives the instructions for how to get into those altered states of consciousness using these specific music files. So they can just go to my website, and they'll see the links to Music for ESP, or they can just go to musicforesp.com.
All right, we're going to come back with final calls with you in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, we talk wizards, aliens, and starships with Charles Adler. I'm looking forward to that. Hey, by the way, have you had a chance yet to watch our television show Beyond Belief? You can. It is streamed through the internet, but with all kinds of gizmos and devices, you can look at it on your flat-screen television and enjoy yourself. Just go to this website and sign up for it. 10 days free. BeyondBelief.com. Simple as that. www.beyondbelief.com. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Neil Slade with us. Neil, when a mother is pregnant and listens to certain kinds of music, might that affect the fetus?
Yes, I think to a certain degree, not necessarily to a specifically predictable degree, but we do know that, that infants or fetuses, for example, begin to hear sound at as early as 18 weeks. And experiments have shown that they do, in fact, respond to music. Now, the kind of music that they like to listen to probably is similar to what they like as infants. You know, kids or infants, very small babies, for example, show an actual preference for certain types of musical intervals. They like what's called consonant intervals, and these are intervals that are pleasant to hear, as opposed to dissonant intervals. These would be like perfect fifths and perfect fourths and thirds, the kind of thing that you would hear in children's songs, for example. They don't like dissonant intervals, things that are real modern sounding or sort of clashy sounding. And they've discovered that just by watching the way that infants react to certain kinds of chords and harmonic content. So probably, you know, children before they are born also would prefer that kind of sort of happy, simple kind of music as well. And, you know, we know that babies, if they want to be put to sleep, they like very soft, very limited range of melody, you know, typical lullaby.
Why does the sound of like raindrops seem to calm you down?
That's a really interesting question. What you're talking about is, well, we can make the sound of rain and the sound of a breeze and running water, we can make that electronically, and it's called white noise. It's kind of this, it's similar to the sound that you get when you're in between radio stations or on a TV station that the transmitter's been turned off. It's that kind of sound, right?
Right.
That's called white noise. And waterfalls sound like that, and running water sounds like that, and breeze kinds of sounds like that. And from what I can ascertain, it has to do with the chaotic nature of sound. And that ties in again with novelty. White noise and that kind of sound is a very random, it's frequencies of sound that change very quickly. It would be as if you played a lot of different notes in very rapid succession so that one isn't predominant. And it's very chaotic. And human beings like a certain mixture of predictability and chaos. If something is too predictable, we find that annoying. An example of that would be a dripping faucet that goes drip, drip, drip. It's very predictable and very regular. Another example of a predictable sound would be a sine wave. Now, you know what a sine wave is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, some listeners might know. A sine wave is a very pure wave, sound wave. It sounds like this. It's just one continuous tone. And if you look on an oscilloscope, something that will show you a picture of that sound wave, it's an extremely regular repetition, oscillation of a frequency. And if you had to sit and listen to a sine wave for anything longer than a few moments, it would be like torture again. You'd find it very annoying. Okay? At the other end of the spectrum is something that is completely unpredictable. So it would be a noise that, it'd be like a loud bang that just came out of the blue, or something that was just, you know, it would be constantly startling to you. So we don't like that at all. White noise, or the sound of river or water, is kind of a blend between something that is very regular and something that is totally chaotic and unpredictable. And it may be, that may be the roots of why we like that kind of sound because it provides both a constant, you know, a something that's at a certain volume that is, in a one sense, repetitive, but the nature of its sound is actually very chaotic. So that may be the reason why we like that kind of sound and that we find those sounds very soothing.
Okay, let's go, Neil, to the rest of the calls. Mary's in Salt Lake City, Utah. Go ahead, Mary.
Hi.
Hi, Mary.
Hi there. I was just wondering, I'm from the late 60s and 70s.
Okay.
And during the Vietnam War, et cetera. And
you were born then or you grew up then?
I grew up then.
Oh, okay.
You know, I was grown up then, almost. And my children are now 25 and 30, and we're going through wars again. And they are really into the same music that we were listening to in the 70s. You know, Bob Dylan, The Who, Joan Baez, and just, you know, love and peace,
right,
things like that. It seems like their whole generation is. Cat Stevens, even.
Yeah.
And so I think sometimes music can be connected with what's happening in the world at the time, don't you?
Oh, yes, absolutely. I mean, here was something that I just discovered this evening, and it was very interesting. And I was trying to make a connection by why would music elicit ESP or paranormal? And it ties in with what you're talking about. Music is something that synchronizes the brain states of a lot of people. See, when people go to a concert, you have got hundreds of people who are complete strangers, but they come together and they, by listening to the music, they share this brain state. They experience a sort of collective intelligence. And of course, the music that you're talking about is a music with a message that says, you know, make love, not war. And it's, and by listening to music like that, it's sort of a, you know, it's a double whammy. Not only do people feel like they're on the same wavelength, but it's a way of also transmitting a musical message as opposed to a message of conflict. You know, music is something that brings people together, and that's why it's that's why it makes you feel good, because two brains are better than one, and 100 brains is better than two brains, right?
That's right.
So if you're listening to music, it's kind of it's the universal language. It's that it's what brings people together. And when I thought about that, it suddenly dawned on me that if music consciously brings people together on the same brain wavelength, perhaps or very likely at a subconscious level, it's also doing that. There was a very interesting experiment that my wife told me about, and I never had heard this before. And this came out of it came out of a BBC documentary back in 2011, I believe. And what the fellow did was he put a couple thousand jelly beans in a jar, and he had 160 people guess how many jelly beans were in the jar. And nobody got it right. Everyone was either too high or too low. Some people were way too low, and other people were way too high. I mean, the guesses ranged from like a couple hundred to 50,000. So what he did is he averaged everyone's guess. In other words, he added up all of the numbers of guesses, and then he divided it by the number of people. Now, the actual number of jelly beans in the jar was 4,510. And he had 160 people guess, and everybody was off. But when he averaged the guess, guess how close it was?
Pretty close, I bet.
It was 0.1%. The average of 160 people was 4,000. 514. It was only off 4 jelly beans.
That's
so
amazing.
So the collective guess, the collective intelligence of the group got it right. Now, if music can bring people together in a way that is that's bringing people together and collectively adding together their collective intelligence to accurately make a perception about what is accurate and real. And that may be why music seems, the right kind of music may be able to click people into this altered state where they can perceive things that normally they couldn't perceive with their own ego-bound or individual mind.
Pretty dramatic. Why is it, Neil, that some music changes your mood? It makes you happy. It makes you sad. It makes you energetic. But it does something to you. Why?
Well, again, it brings it. This ties in with the evolution of why is there music? Why do we have music? The reason we have music is because it enhances our survival. And as it's been demonstrated in children who are learning to play music, and in all the other ways that music is shown beneficial, music is good for you in ways that nothing else can really achieve. And so music changes our brain chemistry. And the brain chemistry helps us to, it tells us that music is good for you by giving you positive emotional feedback. And specifically, when they've done brain scans of people listening to music that they like, it lights up the areas of the brain that regulate dopamine production, which is the feel-good chemical in our brain. It stimulates those areas of our brain. It also increases enkephalin and endorphin production, which is the brain and body's natural opiates, which are like 90 times more powerful than street heroin, right? So music actually produces chemicals in your brain that plug into the neural receptors in your brain that make you feel good. And it's really just a way of indicating that music is good for you in so many different ways.
Let's go to Chris in Orlando, Florida. Hi, Chris. Thanks for calling. Go ahead.
George.
Hi, Christopher.
Yes, can you hear me, George?
Sure can.
Well, let me first, I would be remiss to not thank you. I'm a first-time caller, and I've enjoyed your show. It's fantastic. Every night, fantastic. It's better than a college course. So, first of all, thank you for that.
Sure thing.
And also, I'm keenly interested in this topic with your guest. And I want to go back to his earlier comments regarding, I believe it was his client or somebody that was oddly positively inspired by Bach or Beethoven. So my question to your guest is, have you studied the Fibonacci sequence in music?
Well, the Fibonacci sequence, I think I know what you're talking about, but why don't you explain that?
Well, it's a beautiful mass which makes up the whole everything. You're a thumbprint, the Milky Way, a hurricane,
sure,
a tornado.
Yeah, they're talking about the golden ratio.
It is it's an incredible mass that nobody ever teaches. You have to seek it out only on your own. I've done that. Also, I'm a musician. And shocking, once I started learning it, guess what the music I was playing? Bach, yep. Beethoven, Mozart. They played the Fibonacci sequence.
Well, you know, when you talk about certain kinds of music and when you talk about a harmonic structure of music, it's very mathematical. People have asked the question, well, why do we like the sound of a major chord or a perfect fifth? Where did the scale come from that, you know, we see on instruments? Where is that? And it really comes from the physics of vibration. When you take a string, for example, a vibrating string, and you divide it in half, you get the octave. You get the same note an octave higher. When you divide that in half, you get the perfect fifth, which would be the outside notes of a C major chord. And when you divide that in half again, you get the perfect third, which is the middle note in the chord. So music is a very physical, mathematical structure that probably relates very closely to this Fibonacci sequence that you're describing, that we've seen in art and in other kinds of art.
It's great harmony, I'll tell you that. Let's go next, caller or two. We'll go to Mark in Folsom, California. Hey, Mark, go ahead.
Oh, hey, Art. I'm sorry. A long time caller. I've been listening for 23 years, but I have a...
Thank you, Mark.
I'm a big fan. I'm kind of nervous. That's why I messed up there. But anyways, I have a theory, because I got to music and I started a band when I was 18 years old. I'm now 40. It's going through a rough time, and I found music to be like a great therapy, and also it tapped into some kind of a creative unconscious and also kind of a predictive state. If you like, I agree with the harmonics and the wavelengths of music that give you the feeling. And if you just let go and release yourself into that, you can kind of send your mind into a whole other universe that can help you in everyday troubling situations.
I know exactly what you're talking about. And this was something that we discovered in this research project, too, was how to best elicit this type of paranormal and extrasensory perception while listening to music. Now, I've been really into the paranormal and altered states of consciousness for 35 years, and I've always looked to see, what could elicit that? What worked? What actually worked? I mean, there are individuals who are, recognize that they really have a talent in clicking into these altered states and into paranormal sensitivity and ESP and telepathy. Most of us are not like that. So I've always looked for something that would do that. And I was delighted to find that music could do that. And what's interesting is that all you have to do is just listen to the music. You don't have to make the paranormal stuff happen. The music will do it for you.
And go to Neil Slade's website, of course, and get more information on music and the paranormal. It's an incredible part of the story. Neil, thank you so much. Up next, Wizards, Aliens, and Starships, right here on Coast to Coast AM.